Welcome, everyone, to the Workforce Navigator podcast. I'm Steve McDonald, your host. Today, we've got a super interesting topic, a super interesting guest. We have John Green here. And John, we're going to be talking today about how to build a relational business model that fosters growth. Now you're actually directly involved in this right now. You're the director of talent acquisition at Smart Data. You're actually a father of two. And what you and I were just talking about before we hit the record button was that relations are important in every aspect of our lives. So your family and your focus on that, but how relationships translate into the world of business and this relational business model that you're talking about. I want to start there. But before we do that, I'd love to just give you an opportunity just to give us a little bit more about your background and who John Green is.
That's good. I appreciate it. Well, as you mentioned, I'm a father of two. I've been married for 20 years, and life has always been about relationships for me. It's keep them close and get to know people and actually take a genuine interest in those people that are in your life. So it kind of went with me into recruiting and started this field about 15 years ago, I think, going on 16. Started out in the staffing world and moved into more of a different type of role to actually build the practice out here at Smart Data. So I've been around now with Smart Data for 9 years, almost 10.
Well, you had a lot of time to put together this relational business model that fosters growth. And I know that Smart Data has been growing pretty rapidly. Let's start there. If you could just maybe explain what a relational business model is in your mind, that would be a good place to start.
Absolutely. In my mind, when I think of a relational business, it is one that is very collaborative in nature. There's very little ego involved, and it's going to be very focused around the greater good without title as much. So I hold it down with director. I do manage the team. However, I don't really dictate everything for my team. I want their input and I want their opinions. So that's what I came into. It was a very small company when I came in. And when I met the CEO, I saw that vision in his mind and what he was looking to do with the company as well. So for me, it was that collaborative environment, employees being able to actually be heard in the organization. I think it's a critical piece. It helps you understand really how they're feeling because they're the most valuable asset any organization has. So those types of things are kind of my high-level vision, a relational business model.
I'm going to ask you a question on this kind of relational business model. I'll put you on the spot a little bit here. If you were to say, what's responsible for the growth at Smart Data? Is it the product? Is it the tech? The services? Is it this relational business model? What's the balance? How important is this to the business in fostering growth?
I think the best answer is it's all of those things. So we offer a service that is highly valuable in the current state of the world. We're building software applications. But from a relational business model aspect, or the thought around that, it starts at the top and it has to bleed down through the organization. So when I started with Smart Data, I sat in the room at a square table with my CEO, the owner of the company, our COO, who I reported to, and our CIO at the time. I was sitting in the room with those guys and we were building from there in this tiny office around the table together. And then as we grew, we kind of let that flow into the new office space where we're in our cubicles. We build a new office space, no cubicles. Our developers collaborate, they work together. And so it has to go throughout the organization from the top. And that's where it started with us. And it has to bleed all the way out to your customers. They have to know that you are a partner. You're there to help them achieve their business goals, their financial goals, not just there to try to get their business. That's kind of our messaging. We're not just a service provider, we are a partner. So it starts at the beginning and goes all the way through to the very finalized piece of software that we're going to write or the person we're going to place on your team.
So you're talking about things that most directors of talent acquisition don't, like how you're positioning the company, how you're supporting your clients, this relational business model. Tell me the role of pure talent acquisition in supporting that. In being that kind of organization and having that kind of, I would say, even a competitive advantage in the marketplace, is that you're not trying to sell, they're just to support. And then that honesty, that transparency, it comes through with even what you're saying here. So how does talent acquisition play into all that?
It's a deep dive. I think One of the challenges I faced when I originally started building up the recruiting effort for Smart Data was that the CEO had never worked directly with someone. It was experienced in talent acquisition. He'd never been responsible for recruiting. They did it on a small scale, but it was just him reaching out to his network. So he didn't understand the value of having that integration necessarily up front of your recruiter who is going to be working on finding the talent. He needs to be working directly with them. There's so many job descriptions out there. If you're HR or we get a job description from HR, it's kind of a cut and paste or nothing against them. It's just technical. So the manager on the end needs to be able to tell you how. We look for these things, but here's what I really need. Here's what's going to click with my team, and having the recruiter engage from the end of the search. And then going back and having those conversations that actually fit with the list for it really is the relational element that helps us be successful from a recruiting perspective.
You know, I had a conversation with a CIO and he said, Steve, let me just be honest with you. We don't like HR people. What you're describing there flips that equation. It's not about, hey, let me search and find some job descriptions that kind of match what we want. I'll cobble something together. It looks pretty good. Looks professional. We're going to go with this and see what we got. You're talking about a deep integration, and there's nothing more important than talking about your team, greater team members and departments, than really helping them get their right team together. VCs, private equity firms, they invest in people before ideas. It's that important. Why does the HR industry not necessarily have that deep of an integration and collaboration, that relational business model that you're talking about that you have with internally? Is it hard? Does this make your job more difficult? Why aren't more people doing that?
Yeah, I think there's various reasons, but one of the key elements is they are responsible for more than just that manager most of the time. They might be recruiting, if it's a healthcare organization, they might be looking for a nurse, some sort of, hospitality staff. They're looking for a software engineer, and they're looking for whatever else. They're overwhelmed because they're working on so many varied positions at any moment. And I've talked to a few that said, hey, I've got 20 some positions I'm working on. I'm like, there's no way you can manage that. To really fix it and to be an expert in any of those, you're going to go towards the easiest one, the lowest hanging fruit, fill my positions and don't look like I'm just sitting here filling my thumbs. Software developers are tough. It's not easy. And to understand what a software developer to be able to have those real conversations about what they do is another skill that most of developer don't have that interest and deep knowledge of the technicals.
So that sounds like the challenge to take up. I've never met anybody in business that said, I've got plenty of time to do what I need to do. And I can do it all exactly the way that I want to do it. So if having that collaboration, but you've got a lot of different hiring managers, I'm sure you're in the same situation. I'm sure you're recruiting for a lot of different roles. How do you take that challenge up? What do you do about that?
I have a great team around you. Maybe they don't have to speak software to developers because we are a bit niche, because we are in software development more than infrastructure or service desk, help desk, like managed service provider type things. We really do have that ability to just focus on what we're good and that's where you go to. And that's anything software development lifecycle. And you have to understand what each piece of that means. And that's where you kind of game like, okay, how does this software play with the infrastructure? What does the infrastructure as code mean to the people I'm trying to assist or talking to? And doing that research, you don't need to do the research and understand what you're looking at. What the manager is asking, does it really align with what you're seeing in the market? If not, what needs to change and start hearing those types of things out. So yeah, if there are times where we're shooting at things that we don't normally recruit on just because we really want to help our clients out, we're successful at it because we're willing to take that extra time ahead of time to research to know exactly what we're looking for and to learn at least enough to say, hey, this seems like collaboration with the manager. You say, hey, does this look right to you? So again, it's that relationship with the manager to make sure we get the right person on our team.
So same question from a different angle. You gave us the story that at the beginning, you were sitting down with your CEO, I think your CEO, your CTO, and it was the four of you. You earned a seat at the table with a CEO, CTO, and COO. How did you do that? You said your CEO didn't really understand the value, yet you're one of the four at the table.
I had an advocate at the time, but really it was just the sheer capacity. So with Smart Data, I thought I was going to be a software developer. Turns out nobody wants me to do that. When I got past my Hello World program, like something popped up on a screen, I was pretty much finished at that point. But foundational skills, foundational knowledge of kind of like, what's web development mean? What is a website developed? What does that code look like? And so I had a foundational knowledge just by my own research. I'm going in the field. I can speak fairly well. And then volume was kind of the game at the time, but I was so passionate about what I saw in Smart Data, the people I was working with, making sure that I was bringing the right people to the table, that people were seeing what we were doing and we offer as an organization. So for me, it was like, I'm going to get more. This is a great place, great people. I'm going to make sure it grows the way they want it to. From just being a recruiter that came in to start things off to being the expected voice in the organization fairly quickly.
There's lessons to be learned in the story you just told. Is not every director of talent acquisition or HR leader is going to have a direct background. You had a direct background in software development, even though you didn't go real far, but you could talk the talk, walk the walk. That innately gives you an understanding of the business. And I think that's one of the areas of question is that does HR really understand what we do and what we've got to get done and what our business is all about? Would you recommend that if you don't have that kind of knowledge of your business, that you need to be curious enough and passionate enough to understand that and really dig deep in that? Is that a key to success?
Absolutely. I think that's what I've kind of ingrained with my team of recruiters. You can't just look at acronym. It doesn't work well. If you want to see that success rate, quality talent coming in, you have to be able to talk about it. And one of the things I would encourage people to do if they have the opportunity is to sit in on the interviews with your development managers, your leads, listen to what they're asking, take notes, and then go back to them after that meeting and say, hey, what in the world is a SQL query? What does that even mean? What is the difference between .NET and whatever other technology that we've talked about today? Get it. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be a software developer, I should say. You have to be an expert at asking questions that make not only the hiring manager feel more confident, they make the candidate feel more confident too. In your initial screenings with candidates, if you can ask some questions that are targeted about who they are, what they do, and that specific expertise, and maybe not software development, maybe it's sourcing, maybe it's coaching, it's whatever it might be, call center, figure out what really like the job is and how you speak as someone who knows and understands what they're asking, because you're going to produce better quality for your hiring manager. They're going to get better candidates from you. And the candidates are just going to feel good because they get so tired of the recruiters calling or paying them because they might have certain acronyms on their LinkedIn profile, but they haven't touched it since college. They just put it on there because they've done it. But for the last 5 years, they haven't even looked at it. You don't want to be bugging those people about something that they've done 5 years ago in a classroom setting.
I love everything you said there, but what I really loved was that actually be in on the actual meetings with candidates that your hiring managers and people are having and learn from that environment. You're going to learn so much more seeing how they conduct that interview, what's important to them and what you don't know that you need to know. That's incredible. I see your passion for learning. If I'm going to get the best candidates, I've got to know. I got to know what's going to make the best candidate. And I think that your passion is what is a big part of the success. Now, something that we haven't talked about yet, but we did in one of our previous conversations was you actually, that translates into, we're talking about fostering growth. You have a 98% or something like that, only 2% turnover rate. Tell us how you got that and what that means to the business.
It means so much to the business. We get clients that come back and ask for specific developers that they've worked with in years past, like, hey, is Mike still there? Because it's just, they're such great people and great developers. And so we've been very fortunate. People can jump ship a little bit, but over the last, at least the last year or two, our retention is incredibly high. And a lot of that I would attribute to, one, the collaboration, the environment we're in. These days, we're still in Slack. We still do company stand-ups still every week. It's just in a virtual world that we're living in. So the collaboration, one. Two, we have so much variety in what we do. There's no two clients that are ever going to be exactly the same. And it's exciting for a lot of modern software engineers. You get people that might be an expert in the Microsoft, your C#, your .NET development or whatever. And they're like, hey, I see there's a project going on over there that has some Java or more front-end focused. I've been dabbling in that. I'd like to get into that flexibility in there to become just well-rounded experts in software development without being just a side load. I'm a Java developer for 20, 30 years. It gives variety. And so you might work on a healthcare client project for 6 months, and then all of a sudden you're working on a robotics company project for the next. So you had different industries. It's exciting. It forces learning for them, which makes them even more valuable for us in the long run. And so it really is a nice cohesive relationship from a knowledge share and knowledge gain perspective.
So you know what you didn't say in your answer there?
What's that?
You didn't lean in and you didn't say, see, we just pay more. Everything you talk about there is because as organizations, we don't have just the ability to pay the highest rates. But what I'm taking away from you said is there's a lot that we can do to make it an environment, a culture, an opportunity for growth for them and their careers, their experience that they're getting. All of those are things that have amassed to an incredible retention rate where you didn't have to pay for the highest rates in the market.
It's hard to get some of the giants, and we are remote, so we do get people different. I don't serve the Dayton, Ohio market, and we have to go sometimes for those things that we're still not going to try to compete just based on compensation. Our flexible business model, our collaborative environment, the engagement, the support that we give really to our staff. I talked previously about direction of the company is often driven by our staff. It's not just the COO said we are going to do this. The 401k match many years ago was started because we're familiar with software development. We're agile. We have agile practice. And so there was a monthly company retrospective, and the 401k match came out of that because it was the things that the staff wanted to start, things they want to see continue, and things they want to stop. We got rid of some bad equipment because that was a stop. We gave the 401k match out of this, and same with our vacation, changed our PTO plan. All that's been driven by not leadership. There might be team leads and then down, but that's really what has been our staff driving positive changes in the organization for what they feel will make them happy and want to stay with us.
If you had advice, because you've done this successfully, you've built a recruiting practice from scratch. What are the top recommendations or just tips or just push us in the right direction? If we want to start from scratch or we want that 98% retention rate, what would you suggest? How do we do that?
Yeah, I think number one is ensure that the people you surround yourself with align with the overall goal of what you're trying to accomplish. If you want a collaborative, engaged staff, you need to find people who also have that vision and share that vision with you. It's critical. It's number one. So number two, don't dictate. You can share the structure or give some guidance, but if your staff says, hey, we think this is the tool we need to be using to be successful, use that. Let them make those types of choices. What tools are going to make you productive, make you successful, and what we need you to do? Let them make those decisions. One of the things I learned quickly is smart data, which has become my mantra, thanks to a friend of mine, is if you're going to fail, fail fast. Make sure it's a quick failure and learn from it and move on. Don't let it hold you down and bring you down. Those are my big ones, I think, coming to mind. The collaboration, like I said, has to go throughout the organization, the relational model. And if you're telling your staff, hey, this is what you're going to use, they may not have ever worked with that tool. They may have worked with something better. And if you're not willing to hear them out, and if you're not willing to at least try and give them the opportunity to say, yeah, like this is going to work better, you're going to have issues. You're not going to keep people very long because they don't feel valued. They don't feel heard. And they may be better than you. I've got a recruiter now that I would say she could outpace me. If I was still heavily like in the weeds every day, all day long, she'd probably outpace me. And that's great. That's what I want. I want people who are ready to go and beat me at my own game sometimes. That's important. So that's one of the things I love. I think it's just that mindset.
That's not a, oh, it's a threat mindset. That's what I need. My power is in my team. And so that's a win-win for everybody. So I have one last question, because we've talked about a lot. If there was one takeaway about this relational business model that you wanted people to know, one thing, what would it be?
One thing about relational business model, like I said, ensure that everyone around you, if you're in a leadership role, especially, make sure that the people that you're bringing in have that same mentality. Like, there's no closed doors. Obviously, closed door meetings sometimes have to happen, unfortunately, but you can text me, you can call me. Make sure that your people around you know that you are there as their support and that you expect that same thing out of them. If you're all one team, you're all going to work together, you all have one mission. Make sure that that sticks for everyone on a team, because if there's one person that doesn't stick with, they're going to poison your water or they're going to be gone very quickly.
I love it. Well, here's what I'll say. People are going to have more questions. Would it be appropriate that we gave maybe a link to your LinkedIn profile so people could reach out and ask?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to connect.
Fantastic. Well, John, thank you so much. Your passion for what you do and what you've created, the growth and the retention, it's envious. Let's put it that way. And so all your insights are just so valuable. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it, Steve.